presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Tuesday, race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website too, stevevick.com. Lovely Tuesday morning here in upstate New York. And I can tell you that Tina is excited because she... seems like school, the school obligations online are winding down, and she's out. She first thing this morning, she was up and about and went for a run, and now she's going to work on the flowers. And it's just unbelievable. And I'm obligated right away, before we get into anything with four legs and a mane and a tail, I have to thank everybody for the, and Tina specifically. You know, my hair was starting to get unruly. I mean bad. And I don't mind the top being all out of, you know, kind of the sides, you know, around the sideburns and around the ears. And so Tina said, I'll do it. And so I don't know if you saw it. I put up the little photo of Michael Keaton from Mr. Mom. Hey, Ron, how about a little trim on that mustache? That was the first thing I thought of. And so she said, I've cut hair. I used to cut the boys' hair. I said, okay, I'll do it because I'm getting desperate. And you ever take the razor, take your razor and sort of like try to trim away those sideburn ear hairs and, you know, that are making you look like Professor Irwin Corey. Boy, there's a dated reference. look up Professor Irwin Corey, and you'll get a laugh. so I was confident. I was confident, and I put up the picture of me, you know, apprehensive as she's approaching with the clippers, the electric clippers. But the part that was unnerving was she was. You know, when she walked into the bathroom to do it, she's got her phone in her hand, and all of a sudden I'm listening to what's on there's a video, and she's watching a video from YouTube about cutting hair. I'm like, whoa. She said, don't worry. So sure enough, I'll tell you what, you know, you marry them and you know that there's certain qualities that, you know, that tick the boxes, then there's a bunch of boxes you didn't even know. You didn't even know. And here we are, what, 13 years into it. Well, yeah, since we've been together since 07 and married, you know, less. But I'm astounded. I told her yesterday it's a little unruly on top, but I think I'll wait. I think Vermont is going to start to relax some things, so maybe I'll be able to get to Bennington. Everybody was asking me, "Are you giving up on Bennington?" And Casey says, "Are you on the mic, Case?"
yeah, I'm here, Steve.
Wait, how you looking? How's your hair looking?
Looking like the Wolfman's useless cousin. haven't seen a barbershop in 2.5 months, maybe.
Well, you know, before this all happened, there was that commercial on that was that Apple Pay, you know, what's the little chip thing?
Yeah.
It showed the guy bicycling around town, you know, cutting people's hair. Where's he when you need him?
Probably cutting someone's hair who's less needy, maybe.
It's very funny. I there are a lot of people that are getting their hair cut in the backyard. I've seen a few of those pictures, and I know that, you know, obviously there's all kinds of financial pressures, but I'm going to guess there's going to be some people who are going to be inspired by this and are either going to, you know, go on with it as a sideline. You know, some people that might have gone to cosmetology school and barber schools that are going to, you know, do some haircutting now on the side again. They've rekindled their interests. It's a possibility. In the meantime, you know, down in Florida, I thought everything's why isn't there some beachside barbering going on?
I don't know, Steve. I'm not going out for quite a while. So.
No, you can't go out. Right. You yeah, exactly. Your immune system is under enough stress.
Right.
Jesus. Oh boy. Well. I just had to get this in because Tina, it created a sensation. Tina's outstanding work to clean me up a little bit and make me presentable. And in the meantime, I mean, I'm not being presented to anybody. I'm just, you know, we're indoors. And I wanted to slip that in. Okay, on to the action. And lots today. We've got a Brad Cox visit in the next hour, and we've got a visit from Flavian Pratt at the end of the day, end of the morning. We'll talk to Flavian in hour three after his unbelievable start to the season. We talked to Glatt yesterday with 5 wins to lead the training community, but Flavian's outlandish 6-win day, and yeah, I think he only had 8 mounts, right? I think there were 2 races, including the 2-year-old race, he didn't have a mount. But we'll talk to Flavian and just kind of catch up with him because he made the decision to really kind of not ride. And you know, he wasn't going anywhere. He wasn't running down to Oaklawn and so forth. He used it, you know, essentially as a chance to freshen up. And I remember Derek Lawson had mentioned, you know, he didn't feel comfortable, you know, traveling around under, you know, the cloud of uncertainty and, you know, the most intense portion of the pandemic's taking hold. So feels like he's firing on all cylinders, and 10 wins Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So we'll catch up with Flavian Pratt. Last time we spoke with him was in person at Santa Anita, which was really fun. And he also will tell you about the rest of the family back in France. You know, they're big on the standardbred side. His father and Flavian owns and breeds some standardbreds. But all told, there were, I think 15 wins, whether in California by Flavian's hand or back in France on the standardbred oval. So it was a pretty good weekend for La Famille Pratt. We'll talk to Flavian and Andy Serling, of course, and Andy, you know, Andy's, you know, they're firing up, obviously, with the start of the Churchill season and the partnership between Churchill and Naira. There's going to be a lot of, you know, spring television, essentially. And so Andy's knee deep in the Churchill handicapping, and he's already looking ahead to Thursday. But we'll talk about what we saw over the weekend particularly with Churchill getting up and going. We're going to wait today, either today later or tomorrow. Speaking of Naira, the speculation on the dates and what the big weekends are going to be, how the stakes calendar is going to lay out. They're working on it, and watch for, you know, either, you know, Dave Brennig is in constant contact, and you know, there's certain elements of it that are, you know, starting to, you know, take root. And you know, Wednesday the 3rd appears to be the start date to get going in New York. So 2 weeks from tomorrow, and from there we'll see how the stakes calendar and what the anticipation might be for Stakes Day. I mean, it does appear that the Belmont Stakes is going to be run before Saratoga. And, the assumption is that it'll be distance adjusted. And I would have to guess. In fact, let me look for the piece that I printed. The coverage regarding Tis the Law, and Mike Welch had a piece that talked about Barkley Tagg bringing him back to Belmont, and Barkley telling Mike that they're going to ship a week from Friday. They're going to bring everything back, all of Barkley's horses, June 1st, and that they're, that they're working on the basis of that distance shortened Belmont and having it run, around the end of June. The 20th has been floated. That's the date and the scenario that was floated in Mike's piece, and the 27th has also been floated out, and Barkley just basically, keeping Tis the Law happy and keeping him fit. So that I thought that was a pretty important little tidbit that came out of the piece that Mike wrote. So we'll just wait, and things will firm up, soon enough on all of that front. Can also hit a couple of other pieces before we head to the first break. But at OBS, I reached out to Tom Ventura, and might get a chance to talk, if not today, certainly a day or two. We'll catch up with Tom in advance of the OBS sale. And there's plenty of coverage from yesterday after they laid out some protocols and how they're going to handle the sale. And of course, a daring decision going back to March and going ahead with the March sale. And undoubtedly, consigners and plenty of horsemen were appreciative that the March sale got executed. This is a big catalog that you got to assume is going to bring, as many as possible that want to make the trip down. And in fact, Jessica Martini's got a piece at TDN today, where she talked to a number of buyers and prospective buyers and so forth. And they talked about how they're going to handle it and, their reaction to it. And everybody's, got sort of a mixed, it's kind of a mixed bag, a little apprehension, but, increasing confidence and so forth. So want to talk to Tom about how the sale is going to proceed. And there was also some news out of Woodbine. We're going to talk about Woodbine on a separate health note, an unfortunate health note. The news, the two things. First of all, the Queen's Plate got scheduled, announced yesterday that they're going to run it September 12th. So September is going to be a lot of fun. And with the Derby the week before and the Queen's Plate September 12th. So mark that down. But meanwhile, we got to mention the conversation for later. Dr. Stephen Allday, Horse Health Today, brought to you by Luberson and Reborn and the herpes outbreak that I mentioned yesterday. Has expanded and taken a little bit of a route, and not good. Total of 20 horses now testing positive, and one horse had to be euthanized. So the situation is really tenuous. This is not good timing, obviously. The spring is invariably, you know, the burgeoning period of these kinds of illnesses. We've talked over the years with Dr. Alday many times, and it always seems to be right about now. The weather changes, and I want Steve to explain it. And for those of you that have never had dealings and aren't familiar with the protocols on this, on EHV1, it's bad. It's neurologic, and it some similarities. I mean, in terms of sanitizing, transports and so forth, barn areas, you know, anything that a horse licks and so forth, you've got to clean constantly. And the transport companies especially, you know, are dutiful when it comes not just to this, but on a going basis of sanitizing the vans. But horses are invariably on the move at this time of year, and it causes I think back to the big one, got to be 10 years ago, where it was the horses that came from, it was the show horses that came from Germany, and then they were transported down to Florida, and then there was the one that started at Ramsey Farm, and, there's been, every year almost, there's at least a few scattered cases. Woodbine segregated. They're doing all the things in terms of barn lockdowns, et cetera. Any horse that, shows a fever, and this is why you take the procedures. So we'll get it with, we'll talk about it with Dr. Stephen Alday today at about, second half of hour two. Yeah, Brad Cox, Stephen Alday, Andy Serling, and Flavian Pratt. We're also going to talk to John Lease at Will Rogers Downs. And yesterday, I'll save it. I mean, how about the 52-1 shot in that allowance race? That was nuts. That horse was tough to – I mean, sometimes you go back and you say, yeah, okay, I get it. That horse, that was – got mojo for Jose Martinez Espinosa, a liaison, a five-year-old gelding that came running. I mean, I tuned in as it happens because I told you about the stake and the allowance. And no inkling that that horse was sitting on, this kind of a performance. I mean, the only, I suppose, if you're looking, I guess, for an angle, I don't know. Second start in the barn since moving to the barn. I, had some time to. Yeah, second off, not really. It's not a layoff with a layoff line, but Martinez Espinosa, who was 0 for 26 on the year, it was hard to come up with. That was a very, very shocking result. Gustavo Herrera aboard. And then in the stake, Lady Orchid in the More Than Even for Francisco Bravo. And homebred for Lori Bravo, an Oratory filly. And she won well. She was just under 3-1. And was, when they say confidently handled, yeah, that's what they mean. Confidently handled. Floyd Wethy Jr. aboard. And one off by a couple lengths. Another stake today, and we'll have John Lees talk about it. We're going to have a pair of Johns in the first hour because John Himes is going to join us as well. The one passing from the weekend that I did not get to yesterday was John Mazza. and at the age of 82. And John, down in Aventura, and anybody that has run horses over the years at Monmouth and, you know, in the region, really saddened. There was, you know, on social media, you saw a big outpouring of respect and appreciation for Mazza. And I'm so glad that we had the chance to talk to him last year when Horologist, he did such a good job with her. And what a nice man, and you know, just somebody that was really appreciated. The Jersey horseman community and players. We'll take the break here. John Himes is going to join us first, actually. So we'll talk to John Himes next. At the races, lots to do on a Tuesday. Sirius XM, back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, HorseBills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at HorseBills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice. Voices sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Sometimes I think I'm doing fine.
I love this. The Beths. Future me hates me. we may swap John visits here. John Himes a little later, maybe, and John Lease now. So we might pick up right at the Will Rogers visit and today's stake action. The Cherokee Nation Classic Cup and so now actually nothing there's nothing worse than that case, right? When we make an assumption about the about who we're gonna get first. Okay, so it is John Himes. Excellent. Well, we always enjoy talking to John, and this circumstance, of course, with the passing of John Mazza, not something you look forward to, but. John Himes, let me say good morning, first of all.
Good morning, Steve. Good to be with you.
John, you know, it's funny because the last time when I look in my phone and the last time I reached out to you was, you know, last summer when John Mazza was getting ready with Horologist. And I said before the break, I'm just so glad I had a chance to have him on, because we talked about his career, his life around horses and the game and his son. And, you know, he's so respected and admired by the Jersey equine community, and widespread sadness at his passing.
It has to be. I mean, he was an incredibly kind person. I mean, I've been there 20 years. He'd been there over 60. I mean, he was about as kind as you could find. Every year, he was always one of the first to come to the stable gate. He'd unload his horses, and he'd tell you about each one of them as they came off, and that one's better than the next. And, I mean, by the time the last one got off, he might as well have won the Triple Crown. I mean, he was just so great and just loved his horses so much and loved Monmouth Park so much. I mean, he was a pleasure to be around.
You know, you talk about whenever we talk, we discuss the longevity of virtually everybody at Monmouth. It's the kind of place where employees come and they spend their entire life there. Sons and daughters of previous family associations, and the same is true on the horse side. It's a tradition that's seemingly passed on, and think about Mrs. De Tomaso and Hope Jones, Amory Haskell's daughters. They've been in the limelight. It was wonderful that John would get a horse like Horologist at that juncture in his training career.
It was, and I mean, if you watch that race, I mean, when he won the Monmouth Oaks last year, I mean, he was running against the two-year-old champion, and I mean, you talk about people that have been there forever, DJ Stable, Len Green, I mean, they've been Monmouth supporters for an incredible amount of time, and so his champion comes up to Horologist, and Horologist turned her away, and I mean, for a Jersey bred to go ahead and beat the previous year's two-year-old champion was amazing in itself, and then for John to actually win the Monmouth Oaks, it was just great for all of them.
You know, and again, on the family note, he worked for Bob Colina's dad, for Joe Colina is where he got his start.
That's right.
On the racetrack.
Yeah, I mean, and John started there in the 50s, so what is it, 60-plus years he's been there.
It's unbelievable.
It's amazing. You have the same spot every time I've been there. You pull in the barn, pull in the stable gate is the first barn on the left, all the way down on the end. It's going to be a big missing spot this year, I can assure you.
You know, you talked about Jaywalk and the Greens and Aaron Yagoda and, the campaign that, you know, she was coming into, as the two-year-old champ. the last stake winner, the last graded stake winner of that level, you had to go back almost 30 years. Great Navigator. And I've been seeing a lot of Great Navigator references, since word passed along of John's passing.
Yeah. I mean, that one was a little before my time, certainly know of the horse and, everything that John did. I mean, whether it was these stakes winners or just the maidens in the barn or even the ones that were maiden claimers. I mean, he was just so great. I mean, you need a horse for a race, you call him up. I mean, at least you knew you were getting an answer. If he could help, he certainly would. And I mean, if you could help him, you certainly would. It was such a great two-way street, and it's going to be a great loss for us, I can assure you.
Well, I haven't seen. Let me just look at the obits were a little limited. I didn't see details, but I'm sure that once, and you and I are going to talk a little bit too about the season. I'm sure that Monmouth will do something, whether it's a race or some sort of a tribute on
no,
track.
Without a doubt. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and I don't see it in terms of arrangements, but if I find them, I will. I'll certainly pass them along. John Massa, 82. John, let me take the opportunity to talk about the season, and you guys were out in front of scheduling. In fact, I think to some degree, Dennis Drazen and the team seemed to understand, what was going to be required here in terms of adjusting the calendar. And you went with a forward date right away. I mean, talk about how things will proceed from here.
Yeah, I mean, I think in any business, especially ours, uncertainty is the enemy. And so when you can have something more certain than just trying to say, oh, we're going to open in 2 weeks and then kick it down the road and say 2 weeks and 2 weeks. I mean, we wanted something not so out of the realm and just pick a date so far down the road, but something that was doable. And I think what we wound up coming with for a schedule, I mean, we'll have the horses coming in 2 weeks on June 1. So we'll have a full month to prepare. And I mean, especially when you're coming from a farm or you got a Jersey bred or something like that, it's going to take a little while. So by the time we get to July 3rd, I think we're going to be all systems go in terms of horses ready to race. I mean, we've been watching, obviously, with these other tracks and with the limited number of venues and the full fields they have. We've been very fortunate this year in terms of the applications for stalls, the response we've gotten from horsemen that want to come to the Jersey Shore this summer. We're oversubscribed by quite a few. I'm sure some of those things will change as we get closer, but I anticipate, I expect, actually, an entire barn area full of horses this year for the first time in quite a few years.
Very nice. And of course, the long term planning that has gone into Monmouth, and you fold in the sports gambling landscape, the wholesale changing what we know of that we documented so regularly with Dennis as it wound its way through the courts. And I suppose you're at the mercy of of Trenton in terms of the facility, but and having patrons in the enclosed space. But much like every other venue, John, it's just healthy to have racing and to have the owners and the horsemen and the bettors have a product. The rest of it will fall into place as it can.
Yeah, and I think our product this year should be outstanding. I love the stakes schedule that we revised and put out. Haskell Day, which is only going to be 2 weeks after we open, it should be an amazing card with the Grade 1 United Nations now being run that day. We have bumped up the purses on the Monmouth Cup. That's going to be $300. The Molly Pitcher, I mean, it's just those traditional races that have come that are now being built up, and I think that day in and of itself is going to be a tremendous opportunity. Hopefully we can do so with fans. I don't know how that's going to work out just yet and the number that we'd be allowed to have. And like you said, though, you're at the mercy of the governor, but this governor in particular has been so pro-racing and so proactive, and anything that we want to do, it's just been wonderful to work with and to deal with. And, I mean, having to be at the epicenter of this pandemic in the United States and watching what Governor Murphy has done has just been outstanding, and that's coming from a lifelong Republican. So I give him all the praise in the world for doing what he's done and for his commitment to horse racing. And I believe what you're going to see from us this summer is going to show not only what we did was correct in terms of placing this out, but I think the fans should respond pretty well to the product we're going to be able to put on.
Well, and also the, you know, the sidebar to the schedule and to Haskell Day is the, you know, the work obviously that went in with Churchill. Not only, you know, does Haskell become a scoring race for Derby, but the Pegasus in August as well, which is a, which is a kind of a, an interesting wrinkle.
It is. And I placed it there just in hopes of when the Derby came out with their point schedule, hopefully we'd be getting included. I mean, it's, to me, it's 3 weeks out from the Derby. It's almost like the Lexington used to be your last chance to get in. So we're not seeing what everybody else is doing, but maybe the Pegasus will be your last chance to get in. And, I mean, add to that the Monmouth Oaks, which is 50 points for the Kentucky Oaks. That's 5 weeks out from that race, or 4 weeks and 6 days. Everything just seems to place itself and lend itself to these other races, yet comes back to Monmouth Park for the tradition that we have. I mean, technically, the Monmouth Oaks predates the Kentucky Oaks. But, I mean, for us to have points, I mean, it's a whole new ballgame. We switched the Haskell from an invitational to a stakes this year. I mean, the thought process there is, I mean, we used to be able to control the quality by inviting the top horses to compete. Now you're not sure who the top horses coming out of the Triple Crown races are going to be. So, not knowing for certain where the Belmont will lie, I mean, I've heard the rumors, and I don't, unless I missed it, I didn't see a date certain yet. But it's just, it's a totally different year and a different calendar, and we're just trying to be proactive and stay with it and stay on top of it to be able to produce what we can for the fans at the Jersey Shore, whether they're here or they're betting elsewhere.
John Himes is with us from Monmouth. We're paying tribute to John Mazza and simultaneously taking a couple of minutes to talk about the upcoming Monmouth season, which starts July 3rd. When do nominations close for the early portion and particularly for Haskell Day?
It's going to be July 26th for the Haskell itself. And if you nominate to the Haskell, it's a free nomination to the Pegasus. And also the Haskell, I mean, we shouldn't forget that it is Breeders' Cup winning, you're in. So, I mean, that's always been a huge plus as well. I mean, you win that race, the cost to get into the Classic is quite substantial. So a free ticket to ride in that race is worth quite a bit of money. So throw in the $1 million purse, the Derby points, the winning you're in to the Breeders' Cup. I mean, there's a lot on the line in that race.
So June 26th.
June 26th, I'm sorry. Did I give a bad date?
Yeah, there you go. July, that's all right. June 26th. Well, because this is, you know, this probably well worth reminding a couple different times as we get closer and as we get into June, because as you mentioned, you know, the invitational segment, you know, horsemen that typically have 3 year olds, they, you know, they aren't used to nominating to the Haskell, but the rest of that card too. I'm sure a lot of I'm sure there's a lot of overlap. You know, when it comes to the Molly Pitcher and the Matchmaker and the UN, as you mentioned, and all the other stakes that'll be on the day. And you know, we should also mention, John, the $1 million. The fact that talk about the negotiation or the discussion, you know, to keep it at $1 million, because a lot of places, of course, have you know, pared down their purse structure for their even for their elite stakes.
Yeah, I think a lot of them. I mean, their purses are more dependent on casino fueled money. I mean, New Jersey doesn't have that benefit. We have been fortunate that the governor and the legislature approved a supplement for racing in New Jersey, but it's not to the tune of a Pennsylvania, where I believe their supplement or whatever you would like to call it is in the term into the area of $200 million a year. We're looking at $10 million a year. I think based on the $10 million we have, the purse money that we've already earmarked, et cetera, we were able to come up with that number and just say, this is a $1 million race. This is, I mean, if you look at the list of three-year-old races, it's a top 5 3-year-old race in the country, and that includes the Triple Crown. It's not something we wanted to mess with or change in any way, and we wanted to keep the tradition of what it was. I mean, look, if you reduce it by 250 and you spread that across overnight, you have 37 days, it's that $12,000 a day, $1,000 a race. I'm not sure how much of an impact that makes. If I run, do I need $200 to run second here one time versus keeping the tradition of this $1 million rate? I just think that the cost benefit analysis was there to maintain what we've been doing.
Well, it certainly will be a, you know, will be the major highlight of the July schedule, and with the, you know, with the way in which things have have adjusted, and I'm just looking to see in terms of competition for horses. The Indiana Derby is going to be July 11th. The LaSalle Derby is July 4th. Both of those are 20-point races. You know, so there's a lot more to be gleaned if you reach for the brass ring here, 100 point, 40, 20, 10 at the Haskell. We don't know yet what's going to happen with Keeneland, and they're looking for a home for the bluegrass over the summer, and Ellis is going to fashion a Ellis Park Derby, but feels like the million-dollar TVG Haskell is going to be the big highlight. So, John, I'm gonna speculate that maybe an open air, maybe some open air broadcasts leading up to Haskell. Put me on the patio, and do a couple of days of shows.
I'll consider you essential personnel any day. You can come whatever you want. The facility.
I appreciate it.
Well, it's gonna be. Obviously, if we wind up running without fans and it's essential personnel only, 100 people. In terms of employees, it's. There's plenty of space. We have several hundred acres. There's plenty of space to spread out. Nobody has to be near each other. So,
well, and the other element of this that I can't laugh because, but it is kind of an oddity. It's going to be the two strangest years in a row ever for Haskell after last year's weather intensities.
Yeah, a return to normal would be nice in some way, whether it just be this pandemic, last year. Everything that's just going on, it seems like it's one thing after the next. Although you did mention Haskell the day before, and I missed the Windstar Matchmaker, which I shouldn't have, because that's also a huge race that has other implications. The Matchmaker, which started down Atlantic City, this year the Stallions, the top three get to pick a Stallion from Windstar, and they put up Take Charge Indy, Exaggerator, and Yoshida. And so, there's more down the line in the Haskell in terms of points and Breeders' Cup, but there's more on the line when you come over for the Matchmaker. You get a breeding season to a top stallion that are over at Windstar. It's just, I love that race just for that aspect in and of itself, and I love the tradition that was started back by Bob Levy down at Atlantic City that we were able to take over about 20 years ago. Almost 20.
It's one of the coolest and most interesting little elements that any stake race has in the sport, and it does have a throwback, the throwback tie-ins, and there's interesting. I think I can't remember if JJ or John Parada, maybe Tony Black, that has talked about horses that. A horse or two that was produced by the Matchmaker concept and ended up being a good horse, and I'm going to follow that up. Actually, I can't remember who it was that one of them talked about. Probably Parada, he's a little closer to the breeding side.
Sure.
Yeah, so I'm going to check with John. John Himes, always great, and everybody's okay. Wife and all the
wonderful
staff,
yes.
and families. Yes. Everybody's. You guys have been unaffected. I hope collectively.
Yeah, much appreciated. Yes, so far so good.
Well, John Himes, folks, director of racing at Monmouth, and moved from the communication side to the racing side, and seamlessly another lifer. Whatever John Himes has ever chosen to do, whether it was being an attorney, whether it was being a publicist, and now a racing director, a success everywhere. John, thanks so much.
Steve, I appreciate it. Good talking with you as always.
John Himes, folks, and paying tribute to both John Massa and the upcoming season at Monmouth Park. We'll stay right here because the other John with an I and an E in his last name, John Lease, is joining us from Will Rogers. And we say good morning, John. How are you?
It's a collection of Johns. I'm up next. Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me on, and I'm happy to do it. I was never just John in school. There was always John L. You were never the only John growing up, so I'm used to
That's
John
a good
L.
point.
Or however you want to call me. So good morning.
I love it. John, I wanted to try to reach you yesterday. You were in meetings, and would you have been able to help everybody with the 52-1 winner in that sixth race allowance, Got Mojo?
No chance on earth. You can't have that horse. Let's just get real for a second. You can't have that horse. You can't. If people had him, that's great. You know, obviously you can hit the all button, but since we're being all honest and whatnot, there were some questionable rides in that race, especially up on the pace. And so it turned out that way for a 50-1 shot. That's oftentimes how it goes when a bomb lights up the board. But you know what, Steve? That's horse racing. Happens every day at every track. So fast pace set things up for a closer. I thought that his jockey, Gustavo Herrera, rode a very good race. He saved ground, waited patient, moved at the right time, did everything that the others didn't, and was able to capitalize and get the job done. $33,000 for the late 50-cent pick five yesterday. Huge.
Unbelievable. And, I mean, all the mutuals through this horse, because really it did take a complete set of extremities to – you know, to make this happen. And let's also mention, I mean, it was a three-horse blanket finish, you know, between Got Mojo and then Kanae Bob, who was over 8-1, and Drifting West, who was a little under 7-2. And so, you know, you had the second longest or third longest shot on the board. There was a 55-1 and a 73-1. But the favorite, and I mentioned, you know, that I said yesterday when looking at this race, just at a quick glance, I said, you know, Taruka was going to be favored, didn't have to win. I mean, didn't, and 2-1, it didn't feel like, you know, she was, or he was that special. And boy, kind of chased the pace under Ken Tohill and then just completely folded. And, you know, that set it up. You can see by the chart that, you know, the only horse that attended the pace and was able to finish at all was Parched, who, you know, ended up fifth, beaten 10 lengths, 9 lengths. So this was a collapse, and Got Mojo, 52-1. The exacta paid $1,157 for $2. The 10-cent super paid $9.51. Unbelievable. And the try for 50 cents paid $17.25 for big balloons. Talk about the more than even stake, and things were much more down to earth. Second choice, Lady Orchid, for Francisco Bravo, and I'm assuming wife Lori.
Yes, and that was a surprise to me that she got bet down as much as she did, for two reasons. She had a poor post at that distance, although at a mile and a 16th, you've got a chance to cross over instead of a mile. And for two, it was just a wide-open race. I mean, between her, Springsteen, Country Daisy, She's Shiny, on paper it really looked like you could throw a blanket over many of those. They just all had those similar state-bred stakes accomplishments on their resume. But Lady Orchid, I think obviously the stretch-out was the key for her. She had two sprints under her belt. She's probably better routing, and you can't say that about very few true Oklahoma-bred fillies and mares. And so the bettors were spot on there. And obviously a good training job by Francisco Bravo, who has had an interrupted season. He had to kind of sit it out in the penalty box for the first part of the season, but he's back now on paper. And with that, he was able to get an emphasis on the exacta, because Springsteen, who I talked about, was able to hold on for second. Country Daisy, the winner of the Miranda Diane, I would conclude that she is best as a late-running sprinter, but I can't blame them for taking a shot for the money yesterday. She kind of clunked along for a piece. Typical of a horse like that when they try to go two turns. And so it was a good race, though. And, you know, 55 grand, Lady Orchid is back on the beam. And we have another big stakes today. This is the boys' version for the Cherokee Nation Classic Cup, talking about accredited Oklahoma breds. And this time they're all four and up, all colts and geldings, and they'll go a mile and a 16th, full field of 12. We've got some custom saddle towels that took a long time to come up with here for this one. Big field of 12 in today's feature.
And I want to talk about the race and have you, you know, speculate a little bit and get some thoughts. But I, you know, you mentioned the late pick five and the way this card finished. Side Pocket Bet. That's got to be a Calibred by Vronsky. Yeah,
yes.
Calibred by Vronsky. I absolutely remember that name. This is a, wow, eight-year-old. This is, you know, I got to tell you, John, I've said it repeatedly. This is one of the sidebar benefits of how much attention Will Rogers and Fonner has received is finding these 8, 9, 10-year-old mares and geldings. It's unbelievable. Horses that you've had, you know, you probably in some cases hadn't seen for 2 or 3 seasons. You know, they're turning up and they still just bang away. And here's a perfect example, 8-year-old side pocket bet, 8-1, $18. And, you know, you had a big day yesterday again, $5.5 million in handle. And you look at those, you look at those pools, the pick five, $33,000, you said, $209,000 pool. It's been just a bonanza, obviously. The pick four, did the pick four, 7, 8? No, so because it didn't include, that's right, didn't include the six.
Shocked
so,
pick four, that yeah, bomb. That's right,
yeah, no, yeah, but sure. It's been amazing what has gone on, and you got another week after this. You know, before we talk about today's race,
tomorrow, yeah, tomorrow's closing day. We got today and tomorrow only.
Oh.
Yeah, don't miss out. Don't miss out. Don't.
Wow, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, had to.
I thought you guys.
I didn't mean to talk over you.
No, I appreciate it. Not at all. Okay. Yeah.
Oh,
just my own schedule.
You are speechless at that news. I can tell. This has been flabbergasting.
I am.
I'm so sorry to disappoint.
No, because I thought
a wild ride ends tomorrow. Yeah, we are kind of out of purse money. But no, in all seriousness, this was what the meet was scheduled. Yeah, exactly. No, this was always the meet that was scheduled. We never extended. We were always going to end tomorrow, May 20th, which we will. But just to go back to, like you were saying, side pocket, but it's been surreal for me to see not only the older horses, we've got 8, 9, and 10-year-olds that race here every year, not very well, but the difference this year is that the ones that shipped in, like Side Pocket Bet is a good example, she's a mare that it's kind of surreal for me sometimes to sit and look at these races because they're names that I'm familiar with from places like California as the Del Mar Simulcast host. I've been talking about these horses for years. And all of a sudden they come here and they're racing at Will Rogers. And I kind of have to shake my head and take a second. Wait a minute. What are we doing here? Oh, right. They're coming to race here at my track that I'm working at? Oh, okay. So Side Pocket Bet is a good example for an 8-year-old California bred. I also want to give credit where it's due to her trainer, John Arnett. He has been deadly with his shippers coming in from New Mexico. That guy's a good trainer. His horses look good physically on the track. They run well right alongside of that. And she's a good example. You know, that was probably the right price for her. You said $18 or something because I've never been a huge fan of horses that win routing and then they cut back to a sprint. But she was able to get that done and just showed that she was in the right spot and she's sharp right now. So, yeah, but it just shows with her paying $18 in that deep, big field in the last night, the value is there, and the races are so deep that you can get a horse like that who's live, and they have to go off at maybe 6 or 8 to 1 just because if there's so many horses in the race. So it's been a lot of fun, this wild ride that we've had.
Well, I'm doubly glad that I got a chance to talk to you before the season ended, you know, because that would have felt bad. Where do things stand, by the way, as to where, you know, where the horsemen, where this set of horsemen are headed? Because I haven't, other than Lone Star opening the backstretch, I haven't heard a start date to their racing.
You know, what's going on right now, Steve, is all of the trainers are in the same boat as far as playing a little bit of the guessing and a waiting game, but also it's everybody's got a plan B. For example, the next track on this circuit is Fair Meadows Tulsa. Now, that's a fair meet, June and July. It's a 5/8 bull ring track, and we will run 34 days of live racing there, June 5th through July 26th. It's a complete smorgasbord of thoroughbreds, quarter horses, paints, and Appaloosas. But to answer your question, they're going all different directions as soon as they know what direction to go. You mentioned tracks are beginning to advertise the opening of backstretches and putting out the word of, hey, you know, come on down, we're going to race. But like you say, until they declare a start date, put out a condition book, and do some things that are a bit more tangible, it's all just talk until that happens. Well, the trainers are not fooled. They know that. So they've got applications out for stalls anywhere that they can. I saw some for Fair Meadows here from trainers that I know for a fact they're not going to race here, but they just put it in as a backup plan. I won't name names, but some of those that usually race in Texas, they are headed down there with the hopes that Lone Star is going to begin quickly. There's other places that on this circuit for the horses that just ran in Claremore at Will Rogers, many of them would look to Canterbury in Minnesota. Others are waiting to see what's going to happen in Iowa at Prairie Meadows. You've got Indiana. You've also got the tracks in Louisiana, including Evangeline. So they've all got their eyes on all of those different places, different trainers for different reasons. But like you say, until they actually put the green light on and say, okay, we are racing, I have a feeling that I'm going to get at least some of these trainers that show more interest in Fair Meadows starting June 5th than they ever have before until other tracks actually do start opening up. So we're still in a bit of a guessing game as far as this all goes.
No, I appreciate that, and I'm glad you brought up Fair Meadows. And so, at the very least, the people that have been playing Fawner and have learned how to handicap a bull ring, they can take that expertise and move it right over to Fair Meadows. I love it.
Yeah, it's a 5/8 track. As you know, I will just say, it's all about who can run the turn. But the problem is that doesn't really show on the form in black and white. But the horses that will win over there, they have speed. We run a lot of half-mile races, and it's tough to win if you're not 1, 2, 3 by the time they hit the turn. That's a one-turn race. But for two, it's the ones that every time they go around a turn, they make up 5 lengths on the other horses. And there will be some big short-priced favorites, big favorites, I should say, that go out there and they get beat because they just can't run the turns well. So kind of a crapshoot, but once you figure it out, maybe you'll identify a couple of horses that really do take the turns well and might be able to cash a price on them. One other thing about that, too, don't be fooled by distance. They can either bull ring or they can't is the way to look at it. So if you've got a horse that used to be a sprinter, let's say he goes 6 furlongs at Will Rogers on the big track, if they take him to Fair Meadows and discover that he can run sideways in terms of taking the turns, that horse will run as far as we write races. Because on the bull ring, going around and around, they can get a distance if they can bull ring. But when you take a horse like that and put them on a big mile track, they're going to run out of gas after about 4 or 5 furlongs. So don't be fooled by the distance. If they can bull ring, take them at the longer distance, because that's not going to stop them on that track.
No, appreciate that, John. John Lease with us from Will Rogers, and the end of the meet coming here very quickly. And today you got that stake. Let's take a look and get some thoughts. The favorite and the deserved favorite is going to be United Patriot. Seems to have on paper a class edge. However, going to have to second off the layoff is going to have to pick it up for Michael Baylor. And I thought there were a couple of interesting alternatives. How you look at this?
For sure. United Patriot is coming off an effort last time where he just didn't fire. But like you say, he had an alibi, and I think they've been pointing for this race. So off of his lifetime record, I have to give him the edge. But certainly, especially from that post, there's some other horses in there that warrant consideration. This race, I got to say, came up really tough this year. Normally, this would be about a 7 or an 8-horse field. And if you're asking, you know, well, why would that impact the Oklahoma bred divisions as far as, you know, the COVID and all of the extra business you've been getting? It's because the other 5 or 6 horses that are in the field that wouldn't have been in other years, they would have participated in other open races, not restricted to Oklahoma bred, and they would have done well enough that they wouldn't be in this race at the end of the meet. This year, though, they have been staying away from those tough open races with these shippers that come in that they can't beat, and they have been starved for opportunities that are restricted to Oklahoma bred. So that is the reason why we've got so many horses in the stake this year for the Oklahoma breds. They've been waiting for a spot like this to go for the good money against state breds, because frankly, some of them have just been getting beat up all meet in these open condition allowance races. And so that's why I think you have so many of them in here. That said, it's also extremely competitive. I mean, you've got horses 8, 10, 12 to 1 on the morning line that actually have a legitimate chance I'll give you a price, Gospel Abe. I know it looks like he's outclassed, but you know what? On numbers, his recent races are awfully good. And don't forget about the mile and a 16th. That does make a difference versus a mile. That horse is going to be finishing. And at a price, I think that at least is going to land him in the tri or the superfecta. The second choice on the line, though, Quality Rocket, is the one that I do think is very live right alongside of United Patriot, not to be chalky. But he's got that pattern of two sprints and stretching out today, two good sprints as well against good open horses like I was talking about as well. And that kind of mirrors the pattern of yesterday's winner, Lady Orchid, coming off those two sprint races. So I do fully expect Quality Rocket to be primed, and I think that he'll fire. But again, those two favorites, they're going to have to bring their race because this is not just a layup today. The likes of Gospel Abe and some of those other, you know, 8, 10, 12 to 1 shots. Kirk of Diamonds on the rail has got a shot. This is a deep, deep feature for 55,000.
You know who caught my eye a little bit as another price? Because Gospel Abe is 12, is quick. Jose Ibarra, I know he's, you know, Jose is 1 for 28 on the meet. If he runs back to that May 4th mile effort when he got beat a neck and, you know, kind of laid a little closer, you know, Sanchez is his regular rider. This horse is, I think, got a little bit of a look to him. There's not a lot of pace in here, so you're going to have to, I think, stay in contact. It's one of the reasons that Quality Rocket, you know, looks healthy. But, you know, Quick actually has tried the mile in a 16th. It's not on his PPs if you're looking, you know, at the last dozen starts. But he's wanted a mile in a 16th. 12 to 1, I'm interested.
Yeah, and you're right, and you should get a decent price on that horse. Jose Ibarra, his trainer, has had this horse for a long time. He's a trier, and the same thing, he's coming out of some open allowance races, not restricted to Oklahoma breds. He's right in it, like you say. I mean, I could make a case for half of these, really, and it's just nice to see them all coming together and take a shot there for the big money. I wouldn't take too short of a price on anybody, including United Patriot. If he happens to be overbet, I don't know. He's got a little something to prove, you know, coming off that last race. Is he going to be as sharp now as he has been on his best days before? I don't know. That's kind of a gamble. In fact, with the other 11 horses being so deep, I wouldn't be surprised if he was just slightly dead on the board as well. But Quality Rocket is going to get bet. I feel confident about that. There will be a couple of others in there that take unexpected action just off of, you know, whatever it is. But, yeah, you could, like I say, you could go beyond about half the field and find some horses in there that they could light up the board, and it would not be considered that big of a shock, that's for sure.
Well, it's a very nice final stake of the Will Rogers season. Tomorrow's 10-race card that wraps it up. There's just a kind of a conditional allowance as the feature. So, John, I'm glad I was able to get you back on for a visit. And, you know, down the road, obviously, the Del Mar season, you got to be looking forward to getting back to Oceanside. And it's really been entertaining and helpful. I've only made, I don't know, maybe 6 or 7 plays myself at Will Rogers, but I'm about about 2 for 6 or 7, and I think I'm ahead going into closing the last closing couple of days. So I'm going to try to, you know, finish with a little something. And thanks for the visits, and thanks for keeping people sane and entertained. And Will Rogers really, I think, helped things along here so much during this difficult period.
Well, that is very nice to hear. And, you know, I'm very passionate about racing. I understand how fortunate I am to be in this position for this track that was able to keep racing when everything else is going on. But I'm just so glad that we were able to provide that, like you say, and that the horse players found a delight in these wide open, deep races, and now that the wide open wagering menu and everything. So we couldn't be more pleased. That comments like that actually make it worth it. Oceanside's a little far north for me, Steve. I'm a La Jolla guy, just about 8 miles from Del Mar, so don't venture up there too often, but just to tease you a little bit there. We'll have to see what's going to happen later on down the road. But, this meet today and tomorrow. And also, too, you know, we put out a couple of opportunities for some horses that have been running at the meet but just weren't able to hit the board. Some unique conditions. We had one yesterday, two today, and one more tomorrow. So We really tried to spread it out for opportunities for horses of all levels to try to get something here. So, but again, Steve, thanks for having us on. We really appreciate it.
Not at all. John Lease joining us from Will Rogers. We've really enjoyed it. As much as I watch different racing from around the country, things get lost in the shuffle. And if you weren't a Monday, Tuesday kind of a player, you would get through the weekend and take a little bit of a freshening and then look down later in the week. But under the conditions as they evolved here this year with the situation, there was just so little racing, other than, Tampa and Gulfstream and Fauner and Will Rogers, that you were compelled. And I guarantee there's people that, whether it's riders that they latched onto and like the way they, approach races, or, horsemen that they see certain patterns and, right away could understand and anticipate, how guys are and gals are preparing their horses. You're gonna keep following these horses wherever they go, whether they continue on at the Oklahoma, Texas circuit, or you're gonna see them in other sets of PPs later this spring and summer. And I think this has been a really fun and unique opportunity to expand your understanding and appreciation of the game, and people like Chris Katulak and John Lease have been the conduit to it. So finish up strong at Will Rogers. We're going to finish the hour here. We'll come right back. Brad Cox, going to check in with Brad and see about his opinion of Monomoy Girl's performance. She's going to have to take another step forward. And going to have to, I think, raise her game a little bit. We'll see what Brad's thoughts are when the heavy heads all start to come together as the season unfolds. Back after this, hour two at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
If you are racing two-year-olds in California, Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Here in Pennsylvania, we have the best breeding program in the country, thanks in part to our Racehorse Development Trust Fund. It's a trust, it's not tax dollars, and by law, our fund is completely protected. These are difficult days for all of us. When life in America gets back to normal, and it will, our PA breeding program will be here, stronger and better than ever. To learn more about how we're protecting the trust, go to PABred.com to watch a short video.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Fletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow, what other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success.
Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.